Dorothy lived in the midst of the great Kansas prairies with Uncle Henry, who was a farmer, and Aunt Em, who was the farmer's wife. Their house was small, for the lumber to build it had to be carried by a wagon many miles. There were four walls, a floor, and a roof, which made one room, and this room contained a rusty-looking cooking stove, a cupboard for the dishes, a table, three or four chairs, and the beds. Uncle Henry and Aunt Em had a big bed in one corner, and Dorothy had a little bed in another corner. There was no garret at all, and no cellar, except a small hole dug in the ground called the cyclone cellar, where the family could go in case one of those great whirlwinds arose, mighty enough to crush any building in its path. It was reached by a trap door in the middle of the floor, from which a ladder led down into the small dark hole. When Dorothy stood in the doorway and looked around, she could see nothing but great gray prairie on every side. Not a tree nor house broke the broad sweep of that country that reached the edge of the sky in all directions. The sun had baked the plowed land into a gray mass, with little cracks running through it. Even the grass was not green, for the sun had burned the tops of the long blades until they were the same gray color to be seen everywhere. Once the house had been painted, but the sun blistered the paint, and the rains washed it away, and now the house was dull and gray as everything else. When Aunt Em came to live there, she was a young, pretty wife. The sun and wind had changed her, too. They had taken the sparkle from her eyes and left them a sober gray. They had taken the red from her cheeks and lips. They were gray also. She was thin and gaunt and never smiled now. When Dorothy, who was an orphan, first came to her, Aunt Em had been so startled by the child's laughter, she would scream and press her hand upon her heart whenever Dorothy's merry voice... reached her ears. And she still looked at the little girl with wonder that she could find anything to laugh at. Uncle Henry never laughed. He worked hard from morning till night and did not know what joy was. He was gray also, from his long beard to his rough boots, and he looked stern and solemn and rarely spoke. It was Toto that made Dorothy laugh, and saved her from growing as gray as her other surroundings. Toto was not gray. He was a little black dog with long, silky hair and small black eyes that twinkled merrily on either side of his funny wee nose. Toto played all day long, and Dorothy played with him, and she loved him dearly. Today, however, they were not playing. Uncle Henry sat upon the doorstep and looked anxiously at the sky, which was even grayer than usual. Dorothy stood at the doorway with Toto in her arms and looked at the sky, too. Aunt Em was washing the dishes. From the far north, they heard a low wail in the wind, and Uncle Henry and Dorothy could see where the long grass bowed in waves before the coming storm. There now came a sharp whistling in the air from the south, and as they turned their eyes that way, they saw ripples in the grass coming from that direction also. Suddenly, Uncle Henry stood up. "There's a cyclone coming, Em," he called to his wife. "I'll go look after the stock." Then he ran towards the shed where the cows and the horses were kept. Aunt Em dropped her work and came to the door. One glance told her of the danger close at hand. "Quick, Dorothy," she screamed, "run for the cellar." Toto jumped out of Dorothy's arms and hid under the bed, and the girl started to get him. Aunt Em, badly frightened, threw open the trap door in the floor and climbed down the ladder into the small dark hole. Dorothy caught Toto at last and started to follow her aunt. When she was halfway across the room, there came a great shriek from a great shriek from the wind, and the house shook so hard that she lost her footing and sat down suddenly upon the floor. A strange thing then happened. The house whirled around two or three times and rose slowly through the air. Dorothy felt as if she was going up in a balloon. The north and the south winds met. Even now, I still find little secrets. The north and the south winds met where the house stood and made it in the exact center of the cyclone. In the middle of a cyclone, the air is generally still, but the great pressure of the wind on every side of the house raised it up higher and higher until it was at the very top of the cyclone, and there it remained and was carried miles and miles away as easily as you could carry a feather. It was very dark. The wind howled horribly around her, but Dorothy found that she was riding quite easily. After the first few whirls around, and one other time when the house tipped badly, she felt as if she was being rocked gently, like a baby in the cradle. Toto did not like it. He ran about the room, now here, now there, barking loudly, but Dorothy sat quite still on the floor and waited to see what would happen. Once Toto got too near to the open trap door and fell in, and at first the little girl thought she had lost him. But as soon as she saw one of his ears sticking up through the hole, and the strong pressure there keeping him up so that he could not fall, she crept to the hole, caught Toto by the ear, and dragged him into the room again, afterwards closing the trap door so that no more accidents could happen. Hour after hour passed away. Slowly Dorothy got over her fright, but she felt quite lonely, and the wind shrieked so loudly all about her that she nearly became deaf. At first she had wondered if she could be dashed to pieces when the house fell again, but as the hours passed and nothing terrible happened, she stopped worrying and resolved to wait calmly and see what the future would bring. At last she crawled over the swaying floor to her bed and lay down upon it. Toto followed and lay down beside her. In spite of the swaying of the house and the wailing of the wind, Dorothy soon closed her eyes and fell fast asleep. Chapter 2. She was awakened by a shock, so sudden and severe that if Dorothy had not been lying on the soft bed, she might have been hurt. As it was, the jar made her catch her breath and wonder what had happened, and Toto put his cold little nose into her face and whined dismally. Dorothy sat up and noticed that the house was not moving, nor was it dark, for the bright sunshine came in the window, flooding the little room. She sprang from her bed, and with Toto at her heels, ran and opened the door. The little girl gave a cry of amazement and looked about her, her eyes growing bigger and bigger at the wonderful sight she saw. The cyclone had set the house down very gently, for a cyclone, in the midst of a country of marvelous beauty. There were lovely patches of greensward all around, with stately trees bearing rich and luscious fruits. Banks of gorgeous flowers were on every hand, and birds with rare and brilliant plumage sang and fluttered in the trees and bushes. A little way off was a small brook, rushing and sparkling along between green banks, and murmuring in a voice very grateful to a little girl who had lived so long on the dry, gray prairies. While she stood looking eagerly at the strange and beautiful sights, she noticed coming towards her a group of the queerest people she had ever seen. They were not as big as the grown folk she had always been used to, but neither were they very small. In fact, they seemed about as tall as Dorothy, who was a well-grown child for her age, although they were, as far as looks go, many years older. Three were men and one a woman, and all were oddly dressed. They wore round little hats that rose to a point a foot above their heads, and little bells around the brims that tinkled sweetly as they moved. The hats of the men were blue, and the little woman's hat was white, and she wore a white gown that hung in plaits from her shoulders. Over it were sparkled little stars that glistened in the sun like diamonds. The men were dressed in blue, of the same shade as their hats, and wore well-polished boots with a deep roll of blue at the tops. The men, Dorothy thought, were as bad as old as Uncle Henry, for two of them had beards. But the little woman was doubtless much older. Her face was covered with wrinkles, her hair was nearly white, and she walked rather stiffly. When these people drew near the house where Dorothy was standing at the doorway, they paused and whispered amongst themselves, as if afraid to come no further. But the little old woman walked up to Dorothy, made a low bow, and said in a sweet voice, You are welcome, most noble sorceress, to the land of the Munchkins. We are so grateful for you having killed the Wicked Witch of the East and for setting our people free from bondage. Dorothy listened to the speech with wonder. What could the woman possibly mean by calling her a sorceress and saying she had killed the Wicked Witch of the East? Dorothy was an innocent, harmless little girl who had been carried by a cyclone many miles from home, and she had never killed anything in all her life. But the little woman evidently expected her to answer, so Dorothy said with hesitation, "You are very kind, but there must be some mistake. I have not killed anything." "Your house did, anyway," replied the little old woman with a laugh, "and that is the same thing. See?" She continued, pointing at the corner of the house. There are her two toes sticking out from under the block of wood. Dorothy looked and gave a little cry of fright. There indeed, under the corner of the great beam the house rested on, two feet were sticking out, shod in silver shoes with pointed toes. Oh dear," cried Dorothy, clapping her hands together in dismay. "The house must have fallen on her. What shall we do?" "There's nothing to be done," said the little woman calmly. "But who was she?" asked Dorothy. "She was the Wicked Witch of the East, as I said," answered the little woman. "She's held all the Munchkins in bondage for many years, making them slave for her night and day. Now they are set free, and we are grateful for you to the favor." "Who are the Munchkins?" inquired Dorothy. My dog is very loudly snoring. "They are the people who live in the land of the East, where the Wicked Witch ruled." "Are you a Munchkin?" asked Dorothy. "No. But I am their friend, although I live in the land of the North. When they saw the Witch of the East was dead, the Munchkin sent a swift messenger to me, and I came at once. I am the Witch of the North."
"Oh, gracious," cried Dorothy. "Are you a real witch?"
"Yes, indeed," answered the woman. "But I am a good witch, and the people love me. I am not so powerful as the Wicked Witch was who ruled here, or I should have set the people free myself."
But I thought all witches were wicked," said the girl, who was half frightening at facing a real witch.
"Oh, no. That is a great mistake. There were only four witches in all the land of Oz, and two of them, those who live in the north and the south, are good witches. I know this is true, for I am one of them myself, and cannot be mistaken. Those who dwelt in the east and west were indeed wicked witches, but now you have killed one of them. There is but one wicked witch in all the land of Oz, the one that lives in the west."
But, said Dorothy, after a moment's thought, "Aunt Em has told me that witches were all dead years and years ago."
"Who is Aunt Em?" inquired the little old woman.
"She is my aunt who lives in Kansas, where I came from."
The Witch of the North seemed to think for a time, with her head bowed and her eyes upon the ground. Then she looked up and said, "I do not know where Kansas is, for I have never heard that country mentioned before. But tell me, is it a civilized country?"
"Oh, yes," replied Dorothy.
"Then that accounts for it. In the civilized countries, I believe there are no witches left, nor wizards, nor sorceresses, nor magicians. But, you see, the land of Oz has never been civilized, for we are cut off from all the rest of the world. Therefore, we still have witches and wizards amongst us."
"Who are the wizards?" asked Dorothy.
"Oz himself is the great wizard," answered the witch, sinking her voice to a whisper. "He is more powerful than the rest of us together. He lives in the City of Emeralds."
Dorothy was going to ask another question, but just then the Munchkins, who had been standing silently by, gave a loud shout and pointed to the corner of the house where the Wicked Witch had been lying.
"What is it?" asked the little old woman, and looked and began to laugh.
The feet of the dead witch had disappeared entirely, and nothing was left but the silver shoes. She was so old, explained the Witch of the North, that she dried up quickly in the sun. That is the end of her. But the silver shoes are yours, and you shall have them to wear. She reached down, picked up the shoes, and, after shaking the dust out of them, handed them to Dorothy. The Witch of the East was proud of those silver shoes, said one of the Munchkins. And there is some charm connected with them, but what it is we never knew. Dorothy carried the shoes into the house and placed them on the table. Then she came out again to the Munchkins and said, I am anxious to get back to my aunt and uncle. Can you help me find my way? The Munchkins and the witch first looked at one another and then at Dorothy, and then shook their heads. At the east, not far from here, said one, there is a great desert, and none could ever live across it.
It is the same with the south, said another, for I have been there. The south is the Quadling's country. I am told, said the third man, that is the same at the west, and that country, where the Winkies live, is ruled by the Wicked Witch of the West, who would make you her slave if you passed her way.
The north is my home, said the old lady, and at its edge is the same great desert that surrounds this land of Oz. I am afraid, my dear, you will have to live with us. Dorothy began to sob at this, for she felt lonely among all these strange people. Her tears seemed to grieve the kind-hearted Munchkins, for they immediately took out their handkerchiefs and began to weep also. As for the little old woman, she took off her cap and balanced the point on the end of her nose while she counted 1, 2, 3 in a solemn voice. All at once, the cap changed to a slate on which was written in big white chalk marks, Let Dorothy go to the City of Emeralds. The little old woman took the slate from her nose and, having read the words on it, asked, Is your name Dorothy, my dear? Yes, answered the child, drying her tears. Then you must go to the City of Emeralds. Perhaps Oz will help you. Where is this city? Asked Dorothy. It is exactly in the center of the country, and it is ruled by Oz, the great wizard I told you of. Is he a good man? Inquired the wizard girl anxiously. He is a good wizard. Whether he is a man or not, I cannot tell, for I have never seen him. How can I get there? Asked Dorothy. You must walk. It is a long journey, through a country that is sometimes pleasant, and sometimes dark and terrible. However, I will use all the magic arts I know to keep you from harm. Well, won't you go with me? Pleaded the girl, who had begun to look upon the little old woman as her only friend. No, I cannot do that, she replied. But I will give you my kiss, and no one would dare injure a person who has been kissed by the Witch of the North. She came close to Dorothy and kissed her gently on the forehead. Where her lips touched the girl, they left a round, shining mark, as Dorothy found out soon after. The road to the City of Emeralds is paved with yellow brick, said the witch. You cannot miss it. When you get to Oz, do not be afraid of him, but tell your story and ask him to help you. Goodbye, my dear. The three Munchkins bowed low to her and wished her a pleasant journey, after which they walked away through the trees. The witch gave Dorothy a friendly little nod, whirled around on her left heel 3 times, and straightway disappeared, much to the surprise of little Toto, who barked after her loudly enough that when she had gone, because he had been afraid to even growl while she stood by. But Dorothy, knowing her to be a witch, had expected her to disappear in just that way. It was not surprised in the least. Dorothy was left alone, she began to feel hungry. So she went to the cupboard and cut herself some bread, which she spread with butter. She gave some to Toto, and taking a pail from the shelf, she carried it down to the little brook and filled it with clear, sparkling water. Toto ran over to the trees and began to bark at the bird sitting there. Dorothy went to get him and saw some delicious fruit hanging from the branches that she gathered some of it, finding it just what she wanted to help out her breakfast. She went back to the house, and having helped herself and Toto to a good drink of the cool, clear water, she set about making ready for the journey to the City of the Emeralds. Dorothy had one other dress, and that happened to be clean and was hanging on a peg beside her bed. It was gingham, with checks of white and blue. Sorry. And all the blue was somewhat faded with many washings, it was still a pretty frock. The girl washed herself carefully, dressed herself in the clean gingham, and tied her pink sunbonnet on her head. She took a little basket filled with bread from the cupboard, lying a white cloth over the top. Then she looked down at her feet and noticed how old and worn her shoes were. "They will surely never do for a long journey, Toto," she said. And Toto looked up into her face with his little black eyes and wagged his tail to show that he knew what she meant. At that moment, Dorothy saw lying on the table the silver shoes that belonged to the Witch of the East. "I wonder if they fit me," she said to Toto. "They would be just the thing to take a long walk in, for they could not wear out." She took off her old leather shoes and tried on the silver ones, which fitted her as well as if they had been made for her. Finally, she picked up her basket. "Come along, Toto," she said. "We will go to the Emerald City and ask the Great Oz how to get back to Kansas again." She closed the door, locked it, put the key carefully in the pocket of her dress. And so, with Toto trotting soberly behind her, she started on her journey. There were several roads nearby, but it did not take her long to find the one paved with yellow brick. Within a short time, she was walking briskly towards the Emerald City, her silver shoes tinkling merrily on the hard yellow road. The sun shone bright, and the birds sang sweet, and Dorothy did not feel nearly as bad as you might think, a little girl who had been suddenly whisked away from her own country and set down in the midst of a strange land. She was surprised as she walked along to see how pretty the country was about her. There were neat fences at the sides of the road, painted a dainty blue color, and beyond them were fields of grain and vegetables in abundance. Evidently, the Munchkins were good farmers and able to raise large crops. Once in a while, she would pass a house, and the people came out to look at her and bow low as she went by, for everyone knew she had been the means of destroying the Wicked Witch and setting them free from bondage. The houses of the Munchkins were odd-looking dwellings, for each was round with a big dome for a roof. All were painted blue, for in this country of the East, blue was the favorite color. Towards evening, when Dorothy was tired with her long walk and began to wonder where she should pass the night, she came to a house rather larger than the rest. On the green lawn before her, many men and women were dancing. Five little fiddlers played as loudly as possible, and the people were laughing and singing, while a big table nearby was loaded with delicious fruits and nuts, pies and cakes, and many other good things to eat. The people greeted Dorothy kindly and invited her to supper to pass the night with them, for this was the home of one of the richest Munchkins in the land, and his friends were gathered with him to celebrate their freedom from the bondage of the Wicked Witch. Dorothy ate a hearty supper and was waited upon by the rich old Munchkin himself, whose name was Bock. And then she sat down upon a settle and watched the people dance. When Bock saw her silver shoes, he said, "You must be a great sorceress." "Why?" asked the girl. "Because you wear silver shoes and have killed the Wicked Witch. Besides, you have white in your frock, and only witches and sorceresses wear white." My dress is blue and white check, said Dorothy, smoothing out the wrinkles in it.
It is kind of you to wear that, said Bach. Blue is the color of the Munchkins, and white is the witch color, so we know you are a friendly witch.
Dorothy didn't know what to say with this, for all the people seemed to think her a witch, and she knew very well that she was only an ordinary little girl who had come by the chance of a cyclone to a strange land.
When she had tired of watching the dances, Bach led her into the house, where he gave her a room with a pretty bed in it. The sheets were made of blue cloth, and Dorothy slept soundly on them till morning, with Toto curled up in the dark blue rug beside her. She ate a hearty breakfast. She watched a wee munchkin baby who played with Toto and pulled his tail and crowed and laughed in a way that greatly amused Dorothy. Toto was a fine curiosity to all the people, for they had never seen a dog before.
How far to the Emerald City? The girl asked.
I do not know, answered Bach gravely, for I have never been there. It is better for people to keep away from Oz, unless they have business with him. But it is a long way to the Emerald City, and it will take you many days. The country here is rich and pleasant, but you must pass through rough and dangerous places before you reach the end of your journey. This worried Dorothy a little, but she knew that only the Great Oz could help her get to Kansas again, so she bravely resolved not to turn back. She bade her friends goodbye, and again started along the road of yellow brick. When she had gone several miles, she thought she would stop to rest, and so climbed to the top of the fence beside the road and sat down. There was a great cornfield beyond the fence, and not far away she saw a scarecrow. I suppose we'll wait for that truck to leave, right? Or not. I never understand people warming their cars up. I mean, you're going to drive your car anyway. Just get in the car and drive it. I mean, seriously, it's 2020. Your car's not that old. It doesn't need to be warmed up for an hour before you drive it. Come on. Have a lovely day. Now, where were we? She bade her friends goodbye and again started walking along the road of yellow brick. When she had gone several miles, she thought she would stop to rest, and so climbed to the top of the fence beside the road and sat down. There was a great cornfield beyond the fence, and not far away she saw a scarecrow placed high on a pole to keep the birds from the ripe corn. Dorothy leaned her chin upon her hand and gazed thoughtfully at the scarecrow. Its head was a small sack stuffed with straw, with eyes, nose, and mouth painted on to represent a face. An old pointed blue hat that had been long to some munchkin was perched on his head, and the rest of the figure wore a blue suit of clothes, worn and faded, which had also been stuffed with straw. On the feet were some old boots with blue tops, such as every man wore in this country, and the figure was raised above the stalks of corn by means of the pole stuck up its back. While Dorothy was looking earnestly into the queer, painted face of the scarecrow, she was surprised to see one of the eyes slowly wink at her. She thought she must have been mistaken at first, for none of the scarecrows in Kansas ever wink,
but presently the figure nodded her head in a friendly way. Then she climbed down from the fence and walked up to it. Why, Toto ran around the pole and barked. "Good day," said the Scarecrow in a rather husky voice. "Did you speak?" asked the girl in wonder. "Certainly," answered the Scarecrow. "How do you do?" "I'm pretty well, thank you," replied Dorothy politely. "How do you do?" "Well, I'm not feeling well," said the Scarecrow with a smile, "for it's very tedious being perched up here all night and day to scare away crows."
"Can't you get down?" asked Dorothy.
"No, for this pole stuck up my back. If you'll please take away the pole, I shall be greatly obliged to you." Dorothy reached up both arms and lifted the figure off the pole, for, being stuffed with straw, it was quite light. "Thank you very much," said the Scarecrow, when he had been set down on the ground. "I feel like a new man." Dorothy was puzzled at this, for it sounded queer to hear a stuffed man speak, and to see him bow and walk along beside her. Did I skip a page? No. "Thank you very much," said the Scarecrow, when he had been set on the ground. "I feel like a new man." Dorothy was puzzled at this, for it sounded queer to hear a stuffed man speak, and to see him bow and walk along beside her. "Who are you?" asked the Scarecrow, when he had stretched himself and yawned. "And where are you going?"
"My name is Dorothy," said the girl, "and I am going to the Emerald City to ask the Great Oz to send me back to Kansas."
"Where is the Emerald City?" he inquired. "And who's Oz?"
"Why, don't you know?" she returned in surprise.
"No, indeed. I don't know anything. You see, I'm stuffed. I got no brains at all," he answered sadly.
"Oh," said Dorothy. "I'm awfully sorry for you."
"Do you think," he asked, "if I go to the Emerald City with you, that this Great Oz could give me some brains?"
"I cannot tell," she returned. "But you may come with me you'd like. If Oz will not give you any brains, you will be no worse off than you are now."
"That is true," said the Scarecrow. "You see," he continued confidentially, "I don't mind my legs and arms and body being stuffed, 'cause I can't get hurt. If anyone treads on my toes or sticks a pin to me, it doesn't matter. I can't feel it. But I do not want people to call me a fool. And if my head stays stuffed with straw instead of brains, as yours is, how am I ever to know anything?"
"I understand how you feel," said the little girl, who was truly sorry for him. "If you'll come with me, I will ask Oz to do all he can for you."
"Thank you," he answered gratefully. They walked back to the road, and Dorothy helped him over the fence, and they started along the path of yellow brick for the Emerald City. Toto did not like this addition to the party at first. He smelled around the stuffed man as if he suspected there might be a nest of rats, and he often growled in an unfriendly way at the Scarecrow.
"Don't mind Toto," said Dorothy to her new friend. "He never bites."
"Oh, I'm not afraid," replied the Scarecrow. "It can't hurt the straw. Do let me carry that basket for you. I shall not mind it, for I can't get tired. I'll tell you a secret," he continued as he walked along. "There is only one thing in the world I'm afraid of."
"What is that?" asked Dorothy. "The munchkin farmer who made you?"
"No," answered the Scarecrow. "It's a lit match." After a few hours, the road began to be rough, and walking grew so difficult that the Scarecrow often stumbled over the yellow bricks, which here were very uneven. Sometimes, indeed, they were broken or missing altogether, leaving holes that Toto jumped across, and Dorothy walked around. As for the Scarecrow, having no brains, he walked straight ahead, and so he stepped into the holes and fell at full length on the hard bricks. It never hurt him, however, and Dorothy would pick him up and set him upon his feet again, while he joined her in laughing merrily at his own mishap. The farms were not nearly so well cared for here as those further back had been. There were fewer houses and fewer fruit trees, and the farther they went, the more dismal and lonesome the courting country began. At noon they sat down by the roadside, near a little brook, and Dorothy opened her basket and got out some bread. She offered a piece to the Scarecrow, but he refused. "I'm never hungry," he said. "It's a lucky thing I'm not, for my mouth is only painted,
And if I should cut a hole in so I could eat, the straw and the stuff would come out, and that would spoil the shape of my head. Dorothy saw at once that this was true, so she only nodded and went in eating bread.
Tell me something about yourself and the country you came from, said the Scarecrow, when he had finished her dinner. So she told him all about Kansas, and how gray everything was there, and how the cyclone had carried her to this queer land of Oz. The Scarecrow listened carefully and said, I can't understand why you should wish to leave this beautiful country and go back to the dry, gray place you call Kansas.
That is because you have no brains, answered the girl. Brains?
Brains, answered the girl.
No matter how dreary and gray our homes are, we people of flesh and blood would rather live there than in any other country, be it ever so beautiful.
There is no place like home.
The Scarecrow sighed. Of course, I cannot understand it, he said. If your heads were stuffed with straw like mine, you'd probably be all living in beautiful places. Then Kansas would have no people at all. It is fortunate for Kansas that you have brains.
Won't you tell me a story while we're resting? Asked the child.
Scarecrow looked at her reproachfully and answered, My life has been so short that I really know nothing whatsoever. I was only made day before yesterday. What happened in the world before that time is all unknown to me. Luckily, when the farmer made my head, one of the first things he did was paint my ears, so that I heard what was going on. There was another munchkin with him, and the first thing I heard the farmer saying, How do you like them ears?
They ain't straight, answered the other.
Never mind, said the farmer, they ears just the same, which was true enough.
Now I'll make the eyes, said the farmer, so he painted my right eye. And as soon as I was finished, I found myself looking at him and everything around me with a great deal of curiosity, for this is my first glimpse of the world.
That's a rather pretty eye, remarked the munchkin who was watching the farmer. Blue paint is just the color for eyes.
I think I'll make the other eye a little bigger, said the farmer. And when the second eye was done, I could see much better than before. Then he made my nose and my mouth, but I didn't speak, because at that time I didn't know what a mouth was for. I had the fun of watching make my body and my arms and legs, and when they fastened on my head at last, I felt very proud, for I thought I was just as good a man as anyone.
That fellow will scare the crows away fast enough, said the farmer. He looks just like a man.
Well, he is a man, said the other, and I quite agreed with him. The farmer carried me under his arm to the cornfield and set me up on a tall stick where you found me. He said his friend walked away, He and his friend walked away and left me alone. I did not like to be deserted that way, so I tried to walk after them, but my feet could not touch the ground. I was forced to stay on that pole. It was a lonely life to lead, for I had nothing to think of, having been made a short while before. Many crows and other birds flew into the cornfield, but as soon as they saw me, they flew away again, thinking I was a munchkin, and this pleased me and made me feel like I was quite an important person. By and by, an old crow flew near me, and after looking at me carefully, he perched upon my shoulder and said, I wonder if that farmer thought to fool me in this clumsy manner. Any crow sense could see his only stuff was straw. Then he hopped down my feet. He ate all the corn he wanted. The other birds, seeing he was not harmed by me, came to eat the corn too. So in a short time, there was a great flock of them about me. I felt sad at this, for assured I was not a good scarecrow after all. But the old crow comforted me, saying, If you only had brains in your head, you'd be as good a man as any of them, and a better man than some of them. Brains are the only thing worth having in this world, no matter whether one is a crow or a man. After the crows had gone, I thought this over, and decided I would try hard to get some brains. By good luck, you come along and pulled me off the stake, and from what you say, I am sure the Great Owls will give me brains as soon as we get to Emerald City. I hope so, answered Dorothy earnestly. You seem anxious to have them.
Oh, I, Oh, yes, I am anxious, returned the Scarecrow. It is such an uncomfortable feeling to know one was a fool.
Well, said the girl, let us go. And she handed the basket to the Scarecrow.
There were no fences at all by the roadside now. The land was rough and untilled. Towards evening they came through a great forest where the trees grew so big and close together that their branches met over the road of yellow brick. It was almost dark under the trees, for the branches shut out the daylight, but the travelers did not stop and went on to the forest.
If this road goes in, it must come out, said the Scarecrow, and the Emerald City is on the other side of that road, so we must go wherever it leads us.
Anyone would know that, said Dorothy.
Pardon me.
Certainly, that's why I know it, returned the Scarecrow. If we require brains to figure out, I never should have said it.
After an hour or so, the light faded away, and they found themselves stumbling along in the darkness. Dorothy could not see at all, but Toto could, for some dogs see very well in the dark, and the Scarecrow declared he could see as well as by day. She took hold of his arm and managed to get along fairly well.
If you see any house or any place we can pass the night, she said, you must tell me, for it is very uncomfortable walking in the dark.
Soon after, the Scarecrow stopped.
I see a little cottage to the right of us, he said, built with logs and branches. Shall we go there?
Yes, indeed, answered the child. I am all tired out.
So the Scarecrow led her through the trees until they reached the cottage, and Dorothy entered and found a bed of dried leaves in one corner. She lay down at once, and with Toto beside her, soon fell into a sound sleep. The Scarecrow, who was never tired, stood up in the other corner and waited patiently until morning came. I think that's as good as any place to stop tonight. Be well.